The Catholic bishops of the United States are currently holding their twice-yearly General Assembly in Baltimore, Maryland. Among the issues on the agenda, the election of a new president and vice president of the bishops' conference and the chairs of several committees. They'll also be voting on an updated document on faith and politics in view of upcoming U.S. presidential elections. They'll also be discussing a preliminary report on the clergy sexual abuse crisis that has so beleaguered the U.S. church. The bishops will also vote on a revision of music guidelines at Mass. Well, the outgoing president of the Bishops' Conference is Bishop William Skillstad of Spokane, Washington. He spoke to Susie Hodges ahead of the meetings about the topics the bishops are tackling this week.
There are several reasons why this meeting is very important. First of all, there will be a transfer of leadership in the conference. Both the positions of the president and vice president will be elected. That happens every 3 years. So the transition in the leadership of the presidency and vice presidency, of course, is a very significant moment. The second very important item that will be coming up in the meeting is the discussion and vote on the political responsibility statement, or what we call the faithful citizenship document. The bishops for the past 30 years have been issuing a document reflecting on our political situation before each general election for presidency. So this document is very important. It's a document that has, at this time especially, has had considerable consultation with various committees in the conference, and for the first time, by the way, Susie, will be brought to the full body of bishops for vote. Normally, it's approved by the administrative committee before the meeting and issued in the name of the administrative committee for the entire church. However, because of the sensitivity and the complexity of the election this particular cycle, it was felt that much broader consultation was needed, including the whole body of bishops.
I imagine that one of the most contentious issues will be, for instance, abortion. There's often been quite a lot of discussion, even within the church, about whether Catholics should vote for a candidate who supports pro-choice. Do you think this is likely to be a contentious issue, and will it be easy to gain a consensus on this rather tricky issue?
Well, the document sticks strictly to principles and is not a voter's guide. It doesn't point to any one candidate or another. As we say, we bishops are not partisan, but we do engage ourselves in the political process. When you look to the abortion issue, it's a very complex issue. Already several years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, Cardinal McCarrick's subcommittee on politicians and responsibility issued a statement with regard to, for example, the communion issue. And in that particular document, basically it says that each bishop can make his own decision in his own diocese with regard to what particular path or decision he wants to make. Having said that, however, though, this is a very complex issue here in the States. For example, it could be possible that both candidates could be pro-choice candidates in the sense that both would be pro-choice with regard to the best abortion question. And so the bishops reflect on the political situation, offering principles and guidance for the formation of their own conscience. We look to this document as a document that helps to form one's conscience and vote according to one's conscience in the voting booth in the best possible way that he or she feels that this is for the good of their nation and for the common good.
Now, apart from the abortion issue, are there any particular innovations expected in this year's document?
Well, perhaps the document is slightly revised from past times. There's a bit of a difference in the sense that in the initial part of the document, the bishops give the reason why we involve ourselves in the political process. The middle section of the document, the second section of the document, talks about the principles that guide us in terms of formation of conscience. We basically look at our 7 principles of social teaching in the Catholic Church. And then finally, the last part will be more specific guidance with regard to specific issues that touch our country. And then there is a very brief summary of that document, a bulletin insert that will be made available to all the parishes in the country. So from that standpoint, the format's a bit different than in previous documents, but as each 4-year cycle occurs, there continues to be refinement of the document addressing our particular situation at the time.
The bishops, I gather, are also to receive a preliminary report at this meeting on the causes and context of the clergy sexual abuse crisis. Again, what are the main findings of this, and how significant do you predict its results will be?
Well, this causes and context study is the first time that any organization in the United States has sponsored a study, a massive study of this sort. Already, we have looked at the numbers and have taken a snapshot, say, 3 or 4 years ago, as to the numbers of abusers and victims and so on. But this particular study looks to the causes and context of sexual abuse in our own country. We hope that this will be helpful not only for us within the church, but for the broader society as well. It's such a significant issue, and for the first time, any large organization such as the Catholic Church in the country has embarked upon this study. We are, at the present moment, continuing to develop funding for that study because it will be a significant financial outlay to accomplish it, but we think it's very valuable and very important.
But coming back to the question of the causes, shall we say, of the clergy sexual abuse crisis, are there any answers here to those questions?
Not yet. I don't think we've had John Jay College has not given us a report back. We'll hear at least some interim report at the conference, but this study will continue, of course. So I don't think there's been any particular reason or cause ascribed to sexual abuse itself, at least as far as I know.
Another item on your agenda is a vote on the revision of music guidelines at Mass. Why was it felt necessary to revise these guidelines, and what are likely to be the main changes here?
Well, I think it's something that, given the experience of our church now for some 45 years since the Second Vatican Council, that we're looking to refining our music. It's an encouragement for parishes, parish communities, and celebrating communities to use the best music possible, and also for publishers and so on that come up with hymns that are very meaningful and helpful in the celebration of our liturgy. These guidelines are just guidelines, but they should be helpful for us as we continue to improve our music and liturgical celebrations. This is, by the way, Susie, one of three particular guidelines that's being discussed at the conference. Another one would be an outline for the formation of sexuality for our students from kindergarten years through high school. Will be a project that will be launched. And thirdly, there will be also an outline for the content of high school religious education texts. So those are kind of, given our experience now since the Second Vatican Council and seeing specific needs in the church, whether it's with regard to music or sexuality or the content of our catechetical programs, those are outlines that hopefully the bishops will see will be helpful for growth in our church.
The bishops, I gather, are also likely to vote or set to vote on norms for what they call the extraordinary acts of administration. This, I gather, covers financial dealings, for instance, events like filing for bankruptcy. Why were these drawn up? Why was there the need to draw up such norms?
Well, there are specific areas of looking to, for example, the limits of when a person can, or a bishop can, alienate his property. There's also, I think, a section in some of the canons with regard to religious communities and how they need to be in contact with the bishop in terms of their fundraising activities. Those financial matters are promulgated consistent with our code, and so those are simply administrative matters that are helpful for individual bishops as they, you know, as they govern their diocese.
Okay, one final question. You said that they're going to be voting for a new president of the U.S. Catholic Bishops Conference. Is it a candidate who puts himself up, or do the others select a candidate? Can you tell us a little bit about the procedure there, and if you do know already who the candidates might be?
Yes, we do know who the candidates already are. What happens is that about a month ago, a letter is sent to the bishop throughout the country to name five people whom they think would be good possible candidates for the role of president or presidency. And those candidates then, the top five, or the top 10 of those from the names that the bishops have suggested around the country, are put on a slate, or they become the pool of candidates. The election then takes place at the general meeting, and if there's no simple majority after two votes, then the top two candidates then are paired off, and so there would be a maximum only of three elections to to choose a candidate. But basically, every bishop in the country has the opportunity to send in his five names as to who he thinks would make a good president and vice president. One of the issues, too, Susie, you did not touch upon, is a very significant issue for us. This past year or so, we've gone through a complete reorganization of our conference. And so part of the elections this cycle will be the election to some of these committees now that have been consolidated. At one time, we had about 36 standing committees. Those will be reduced down to about 18 standing committees. So about half the number of standing committees will be in existence, but they will have the newer standing committees will have a broader responsibility in serving the needs of the church in their respective areas. That's been a very significant moment and actually watershed moment for us here in the Conference of Bishops in the United States.
So a streamlining, in a sense, of the church bureaucracy.
That's right, that's right. Streamlining it, also cutting back our expenses so that we can stay within our budgets.
Bishop William Skillstad of Spokane, Washington. He was speaking there to my colleague, Susie Hodges.